Thanks for joining us in the trenches with Dave Lappin, brought to you by First Star Logistics. It's the week before the NFL draft, so who better to talk to than our very own Solomon Wilcots, former Cincinnati Bengal, knows his stuff now. He is a national broadcaster, analyst extraordinaire, and we dive into the draft in a very deep fashion with Solomon Wilcots, talking about the offensive tackles. We're talking about the nose tackles. We're talking about the cornerbacks. We're talking about wide receivers. We're talking about a little bit of everything and what the Bengals should do with maybe some of the personnel that they already have, under contract for the 2024 season. So Solomon Wilcots is always a plethora of knowledge, and this one is no exception. We appreciate you taking time to join us in the trenches with Dave Lappin, brought to you by First Star Logistics, as always, emanating from our outstanding studios they've set up for us. And we have got the perfect guest as the draft approaches, none other than Solomon Wilcots, drafted out of Colorado himself, played in the National Football League for the Bengals, the Vikings, the Steelers, and he's a national media star, TV, radio, podcast, you name it, Solly does it. In fact, Solly is 2000 Emmy winner for his ESPN sideline coverage. So, I mean, the dude's at the top of the profession now. No question about it. Solly, appreciate your time, my man.
Yeah, that's called being in the right place at the right time. You know, you're working with the great Fred Gaudelli. You know, Chris Collinsworth knows a lot about that guy. And I knew it when I was teamed with him as my producer for Sunday Night Football. This guy's special, you know. He tells the story of our game, in a way that most producers can't. He understands the game at a very high level, and he allows the athlete and the coach to really tell their version of the game. Most of these broadcast crews, as you know, Dave, they tell their own story, but they use you to tell. Fred Gaudelli says, no, what are you seeing? You're the former player. Right. Tell us what you're seeing, Saul. And then don't be afraid to say it. Oh, man. And that it was the best place to start at the national level because I had worked here locally. But after I worked with a guy like him, there was no turning back, if you know what I'm saying.
Saul, as we both know, there's nothing worse than a producer or director in your ear saying, like, ridiculous stuff. It's like what they're saying, what they're wanting you to talk about has no bearing on what happened. It's like, dude, get out of my ear, man.
We're in the truck. I'm in the booth. He's down in the truck, but he's in my ear. I'm like, do you want to call up here and call the game? Because I can stay home. I can stay home and let you call the game. Or how about let me produce and get in your ear while you're trying to collect your thoughts? I said, you know, and then you have the postmortems. And I would say, guys, you have to allow us to tell our story of how we see the game, if either we're going to be trusted with that or not. But I can't speak for someone else and how they see the game. I only can tell you how I see it. So that's a constant battle in the broadcast business. But you've been there, done that. You know what it's all about.
I'm telling you, when you do get a producer or director, says, look, I'm listening to you and I'm following you. I'm going to get pictures for what you're talking about. It's not going to be the other way around. I'm going to find pictures for what you're talking about. You're going to be leading me. Okay. Yeah. This is great. Yeah. Okay, good. Let's go. Let's roll.
Tom Brady's going to be calling games this year. I can't wait. Because I love Tom. I've met with him in so many production meetings. I think he's got to be able to say how he sees the game. That's what fans want to. They don't care what some guy in a truck who never played. They care about what Tom Brady thinks about the moment. And I think that's going to be very refreshing.
I agree 100,000%. Well, like we said, Solly, the draft is rapidly approaching here. The Cincinnati Bengals will be on the clock with that 18th pick. I mean, there's so many ways it can go. I don't know. In my opinion, I see four position groups that are going to be addressed at some point in time: offensive tackle, nose tackle, corner, and wide receiver. Not sure about the order, but I see those four position groups are going to be addressed at some point in time. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you see, and it's almost impossible to project know, what's going to happen at 18. But what do you think? What do you think the Bengals are looking at possibly at 18?
So, okay, you nailed it. Because they did a really good job in free agency, I thought Duke Tobin and Mike Brown, Katie and Troy, I thought they just were really good during the free agency phase of addressing all of their needs. Not some of them, not most of them, literally all of them, right?
Yep.
And to be able to outbid the Dallas Cowboys for Zach Moss, that tells you Bengals are, I mean, this is, they're operating very well. They outbid, I was told, the New Orleans Saints also, you know, for the really good interior defensive lineman in Sheldon Rankin. So, so now you're sitting there at 18, the quarterbacks are going to get pushed up. The top three wide receivers, maybe even top four wide receivers, I think will get pushed up beyond 18. So, but there's so many good offensive linemen that one, it depends on what they want, what they like. You and I both know they run a certain specific system that not every offensive lineman is good for the Bengals. Not every offensive lineman is good for one team. Might be good for one, not the other.
Yep.
So they'll have to see what's there. I think the tight end, Brock Bowers, is there as one that they've got to take a look at.
Yep.
And because anytime you can produce touchdowns, particularly at that position, which I think as we move into the future, we're going to find that a wide receiver is, I mean, a good tight end of his caliber can produce like a wide receiver too.
Yep.
But the price is going to be much less if you're talking about managing your cap. I think that's a smart way to do it. But yet you're not being cheap about it. You're still trying to hit this. Like, look at Travis Kelce. He produces like he's a wide receiver too. In fact, he produces better than most teams WR2.
Yep.
But if you had to use the franchise tag on him, you know what? He's not going to get $21 million a year. He's going to get $15 million a year. So that's why you have to start thinking about it that way. I do think there's going to be a good pass rusher at the edge position. That'll be precarious because I think we already have three or four really good ones now. Yep. But on the interior, they may get one of the best interior defensive linemen in this year's draft at 18. And they may get one of the best cornerbacks on the board. And that's where I think as the board falls to them, I think that's where the value, and it's not just about value because you got to get players who are going to help you win games. And I think they're going to get one of the best cornerbacks on the board at 18, one of the best interior defensive linemen on the board at 18. And normally you would not get them at that spot.
I agree, Solly. And it's going to be interesting because, you know, the run on tackles, when will that happen? And if it's the fifth best tackle as opposed to the number one or number two interior defensive tackle, man, you have all those tackles rated ahead of, you know, those two, you know, if you're going to stay right by your big board. But then if it's close, I mean, at that point in time, my mind says, all right, it's a flip of the coin. Go with the biggest need. Where's the biggest need? Okay. You know, let that be the tiebreaker. If it's, I'm not saying that if one guy is number, you know, 13 on your board and another guy's number 21 on your board, that's clear cut. But if you got, you know, 13 and 16, you know, it's like, Now go by, you know, what you think your biggest need might be. I mean, but it's a great year for offensive tackles. I mean, you look at this. I've kind of compiled a little bit the numbers of guys potentially by position. The wide receiver position is going to be probably at least a half a dozen in the first round. It's going to be like 40 guys taken in the draft at the wide receiver potentially. It's going to be 26 or more offensive tackles taken. Could be as many as, you know, six or seven in the first round, and then you got to go down to the fourth round where there's maybe another half a dozen, and then in the seventh round another half a dozen. It's not every round, but so you got to kind of make a determination as to when, you know, the ebb and flow of when the runs on players are going to happen. Then, as you said, in the secondary, 41 corners are going to get drafted. There's going to be a half a dozen corners in the first round, even more in the second round, you know, maybe another half a dozen in the fourth round. Every single round there's more than a handful of corners projected to be taken. So, like you're saying, cornerback, it's a throw-in league, right? A bunch of quarterbacks are going to be taken high, potentially 40 receivers and 40 cover guys. It's a throw-in league. It makes sense.
So I will look at it like this, and this is where you get very granular. The art of drafting players, for one, is very tough. It's very, you could know what players you want, but knowing where to take them, right? Like, why would you take a guy that you really, really like in the second round?
Yep.
If you can get him in the seventh round.
Yep.
I would just say, err on the side of make sure you get your guy. You know, now, but you better be right on that guy. Better be right that he can play. Then I think the laws of supply and demand have to come into the way that you think. In other words, you mentioned it. High demand for covered corners in LA, but also a very high supply. What does that tell you? Don't have to necessarily take, if the one you truly want that you think is special,
yeah,
say Quinyon Mitchell at Toledo.
Right.
Say he's the one guy that you think is just special. But you also know that he may be gone by the time you get to 18.
Yep.
And then you don't see any of the other guys. Okay, you like him. And Kool-Aid McKinstry's going to be there, but you don't think he's special because he's got the foot injury. The law of supply and demand said there's going to be some other guys who are fairly close to his talent and ability that you can get later. You know, Jalen Watson, who's a starting cornerback for the Kansas City Chiefs, over the last 2 years, he was a rookie in 2022, second-year player in 2023. They won two straight Super Bowls, overhauling a secondary. They had drafted L'Jarius Smith in the third round. He didn't give up a single touchdown pass last year. He ended up trading him. You know why they traded him? Because they believe they can draft and develop at that position, and they don't have to even do it with a first-round pick. That tells you what the kind of players we're getting coming into our league. Now, you got to coach them. You got to help them with their techniques. Steve Spagnuolo's very good at that. So is Lou Anaromo. They're very good at that.
Yep.
So you don't have to be, we need a corner first round because your corner isn't a first round pick. Don't think that you can't win with that guy because Richard Sherman was a fifth round pick. Tyreek Woolen, one of the top young corners in our league, just finished his second round. He was like a fourth round pick. You know, you've got to understand the supply and demand. There's a great demand for him, huge supply down the line. Same year we took Ja'Marr Chase with the fifth overall pick, and I would do that all over again, by the way.
Yeah.
Man, Detroit Lions, they cashed in off of the things that we did, right? They took Penei Sewell with the seventh overall pick, and you know who they got later in the same draft in the fourth round?
Center.
A guy by the name of Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And his number is almost identical to Ja'Marr Chase. Now, I would take Ja'Marr Chase over Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah.
But if you're the Lions, you got to love the way that draft fell because wide receivers, high demand, but also high supply. You can get very good wide receivers later outside of the first round who will be difference makers in our league. All you need to do is look at Tyreek Hill and see that he was selected in the third round, but yet he's one of the top wide receivers in our league, if not the best receiver.
And honestly, you bring up Detroit, three first-round draft picks in that offensive line. You know, to me, it's like, all right, and that offensive line's doing it, man. They're getting it done. And, okay, who's the most important player on the team, number nine, trying to get him healthy again? You know, got to keep the dude healthy. And, you know, it's like, all right, well, normally you suffer a lot of injuries in early stages of your career.
Yeah.
Does it end? Or as you age, does it continue? Who knows? Everybody's different, you know? One thing you got to do is you're going to make sure you get people that can protect that guy.
That's right.
Common sense tells me, man, if there's an offensive tackle there that is in a reasonable spot on your big board, even though maybe some others have come off, you know, you might have a half a dozen offensive tackles on your big board before the 18th pick. You know, I mean, that's the way it might shake down for either the Bengals or whatever team we're talking about. I don't think you can go wrong taking the tackle if he's there, if you really like him and help him protect Joe Burrow, because, you know, there's always that injury factor. Number one, he could sit for a little while. You know, you've got an offensive line that's pretty decent, five starters, but you need support. You need backup help. And if you, like you say, draft them and develop them, I mean, Frank Pollock is highly regarded. I mean, I don't know. It, to me, it makes some sense.
Man, we've done great at identifying offensive linemen in the in free agency. We have not been as good as identifying young offensive linemen in the draft.
Good point.
We've drafted two offensive linemen over the last 32 years who've made Pro Bowls. And Willie Anderson was a first-round pick, as you well know, I think, what, in 96?
Yep.
And then I think in 2006, right about there, we took a guy by the name of Andrew Whitworth.
Big Whit.
Made the Pro Bowl.
Second rounder.
We have in the second round. We have not drafted, since Whit in 2006, we have not drafted an offensive lineman who's represented our team in a Pro Bowl. Fact.
Yeah.
Now, that because as when we start talking about paying the quarterback and paying all the players, how do you build a team? You're going to have to draft offensive linemen. You're going to have to hit on them. You know, you're going to have to be able to identify them, develop them, and hit on them sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
That's what the Chiefs did when they lost the Super Bowl to Tampa Bay after the 2020 season. Brett Veach went in one offseason, overhauled the offensive line, drafted Creed Humphrey, drafted, he signed some really good players too, but man, it got done through the draft. And so we've got to be able to identify, there's no doubt when you put the resources in the offensive line early, it usually pays off. I always try to track the teams that are winning and when did they make their turn. Detroit had already had two first round picks and on that offensive line.
Yep.
And now they added Penei Sewell. You get three of them. You end up winning a lot of games. 2006, the Jets had two first-round picks. They used both of them on offensive linemen, DeBrickashaw Ferguson and Nick Mango, our guy from Kettering, right? They played at Ohio State, who I absolutely love. And they went on a run. The Jets for the next 10 years, you know, Rex Ryan, they were beating some of the best teams. They had a Darrell Revis. They didn't have the best quarterback, but they won a lot of games because they had this stellar offensive line. And sometimes you got to stop down and be very disciplined to pass on speed or talent at one of the skill positions on offense and really build a great offensive line. And after that, all you got to do is watch your team collect a lot of wins each and every week.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I agree with everything you're talking about. When I look at this group of offensive linemen, I like Fuaga. He's a mauler. You know, he finishes Fuaga. J.C. Latham, to me, is a beast, man. I mean, I think he's a plug-and-play dude.
Yeah.
I think 6'5 plus, you know, closer to 6'6, 340-plus pounds.
Oof.
His hand size, 11 Oof. Inches. 11 in- I mean, he has a hand of 11 inches. Mm-hmm. This Amarius Mims from Georgia. Here's another guy. You talk about a clay that you can mold into something, almost 6'7", 340 pounds, runs a sub 5'140, hand size 11 and a quarter. These guys have these big, strong hands they get on people and just kind of control people. Now, the thing on Mims, he's been injured, hadn't played much. Well, a guy named Anthony Munoz came out of USC. Same thing. I'm looking at Mims, and it's like, man, you don't think Frank Pollock might be able to mold Mims into something potentially, but do you take it with the 18th pick? You know, that's the thing. That's the thing you got to kind of wonder about. But I'm telling you, man, Latham, you can put a billboard across that guy's back. Great advertising, man. That dude is, that is one big, strong dude.
J.C. Latham is the guy that if he's there at 18, like, he's the kind of guy might make you think about going up to go get him.
Right, I mean, on. Yeah.
That's right. That, I mean, you have to think that way. If you can get to maybe 15 ahead of the coach, I wouldn't bat an eye if they did that, right? So, I mean, to me, he's the guy. I mean, if there's one guy, because we're not going to get Joe Alt, right? You're not going to get one of those other guys. But if you got him, I would be like, oh, I would be really happy. Now, here is the thing that concerns me, and this is where, when I talk about evaluating these guys, this is not as simple, and I'm really talking, I know you know this, talking to our viewers and our listeners here. This is not as simple as, okay, J.C. Latham is gone. Now, let's take the next best guy. The next best guy means you're passing on a lot of good football players. Who is the who's the next best player on your overall board?
Right on.
And that's what we did in 2018 when we wanted Frank Ragnow. All right. Bad dude, by the way, at center. Oh,
no doubt.
I still shed tears over the fact that Detroit swooped in and took one pick. I know. They swooped in, took, but it happens, right? And so instead of trading down or going with another player at another position, we just took the next best center, and that was Billy Price. So that means we pass on a lot of good players.
Yeah.
Just because of that need. And yeah. we still end up missing. Just because he's the next best center don't mean he's a good center. Like it turns out that the distance between Frank Ragnow and no, this is no offense to Billy Price, there was a huge gap between those two. Really was. And so that's where we've got to avoid doing that. Just because we would like the tackle, we want the tackle. J.C. Latham's in our sights. Oh, somebody just snatched him up. And now we take the next tackle because it's the next tackle. No, it ain't. The talents are different. The fits are different. The personalities of those two players are different. Who fits in with our group? Different. Who can handle, you know, Coach Pollock? Different. There's going to be, you know what I'm saying? So at that point, I think that's where wisdom has to prevail. You know, and that, as they say, we got some smart people and intelligent people. We're all smart people. Intelligence is not synonymous with wisdom, right? You know, it's like they're not the same thing. You know, wisdom is applied knowledge. It's taking that knowledge and applying it. And man, we've got to be able to do that, because I think with all the quarterbacks being pushed up, we got our quarterback. All the receivers, we really have our receivers. Yeah, we're going to get one somewhere along the line.
Right.
But some other players that we do need are going to come down and going to be right in our wheelhouse at 18. And how we operate, we could end up getting a top 10 player with an 18th overall pick.
No question, Solly. And you know, it's like, all right, so let's see. Interior defensive tackle. Well, the two best will be gone by the time probably you get to, you know, the middle of the second round again. But there are some defensive tackles. There's still a half a dozen that you could get in the second round potentially, you know, and could end up being still some pretty good football players. But if there's a corner, you know, that, oh man, this corner is still there at 18. Yeah, don't take the fifth or sixth best offensive tackle. And man, this corner, we had this corner up here on our board, and whatever reason he's still here. I mean, you got to think through all of it. It's going to be, it's going to be very interesting. But overall, I mean, I agree with you. I think the Bengals addressed a lot of needs in free agency, obviously, and still, this draft is deep at a lot of positions that hit them and probably a lot of teams in the National Football League pretty darn well. It's a good draft, isn't it?
It's a really good draft for some really good players.
Yep.
And it's really about finding players that fit into your team. But we're going to need some rookies to produce, like play now, kind of. I mean, you know what I mean? Like if you get one at right tackle, I don't think you have to force him into play now.
Right.
But at some point, you know, like how long will Trent Brown hold up? You know, maybe he plays and starts every single game this season. And boy, that'd be great, because that guy can learn.
Yeah.
If it's an interior defensive lineman, no, you're going to need him. You're going to need him now. If he's a corner, you're going to need him now. Here are some numbers. I'm going to share this with you. This is just, you know, these numbers probably. And they're uncharacteristic of a Lou Anarumo defense. We allowed the third most explosive pass plays of 15 yards or more 1 year ago. 105, ranked 29th in the NFL. This despite ranking in the top half in sacks and quarterback pressures. So we're in the top half of sacks and quarterback pressures, but we're getting laced on the back end.
Yeah, it's easy to pin the blame there, isn't it?
That's right, man. You can't say we ain't getting a pass rush. Right. Yes, we are.
Right.
You know, so now look, we faced the most deep pass plays of 20 yards or more than any teams wanted to go deep on us more than anybody else. 91 of those passes. Some of them were like a slant that went for 80. Okay, we remember that. I don't need to remind you. We've allowed the 6th most passing yards last year of any team in the NFL. Almost 4,500 passing yards in those 17 regular season games. You and I know that's way too much. And we allowed almost 1,000 yards of after the catch. That means you're not tackling well. You're allowing guys to run away from you. And so those are some numbers that are very critical. I could show you some stuff that in terms of our run defense, we allowed the 4th most rushing yards after contact, 29th in the NFL. 4th most first down runs for first downs. So we could get off the field if we stopped this run play, right?
Yeah.
No, they're able to convert. We were 29th in that category. These are the things that coaches and they look at the end of the year to say, where were we deficient?
Yep.
And they say, okay, we got to get better there. And you know, and if you can fill that spot with a veteran in free agency, but you know that veteran is, say, close to 30 years old or older, now you got to draft there too, because you've got to have some depth, because you don't know if that guy's going to hold up.
Sure.
As good as DJ Reader was, there was 2 years, you know that, he got injured, but he was a bad dude when he was out there.
Oh, yeah.
But you get 30 and older, you need to have a younger guy in there too to pair with him. We were fortunate to have BJ Hill to kind of man the interior part of our defensive line. But those are the areas, you just heard the data points. Those are the areas defensively where we have to get better. We cannot give up big pass plays and coverage. And then we got to be better at the point of attack in defending the run.
So final question, Saul, and I appreciate you carving all the time you do, because I know you are a busy dude, and we love you, man. Dax Hill, he was like basically swarmed upon in the locker room day one of workouts, that players can go down and officially work out with the team. It's phase one, you know, prior to the OTAs and all that. Mm-hmm. And every media member basically was at Dax Hill's locker asking him, what's up? What's going to happen? And he said, he's just going to do it, take care of business. He doesn't know exactly how it's going to unfold, but he's going to do the best job he can. And, I mean, what can you say? The eye you have, you played in the back end. Mm-hmm. Where do you think is the best fit for Dax Hill? Do you think he could slide to corner? Do you think he'd play in the slot? Is he a safety? He's shown he's got versatility. He's got athletic versatility. Where do you think is the best place for him to end up?
First of all, I think when we see a player who's sort of a jack of all trades, master of none, and we want him to be able to do all these things, but then we want him to do the one thing very well. And if they, you know, I think he struggles sometimes, like not taking the best angle, for instance, not maybe having the best anticipation. And he did that better his rookie year than he did last year. And it was, I think, just more on his plate. So there were some moments, right? But I think right now, the way that, if I'm talking about player development, right?
Yeah.
Let's get Dak doing one thing well and one thing wrong. And then I'm telling you now, you're going to see his confidence shoot up. You're going to see him making more plays. And then what you do, like, you know, like an onion, man, it's layered. You know, until you got to peel back those layers to get to the core of who and what he's about. But you know he's a good football player. You know that he's a good tackler. He's just got to take better angles. I would just play him right now in that dime position, and I would try to get him on the field as much as I can. Any team that's got a really good tight end, you're covering him. Mm-hmm. He's your guy. So I want you working with the cornerbacks in man-to-man coverage during one-on-one drills. All the other team drills, you're going to be like my wheel backer when we go to a dime sort of defense. When we have 6 defensive backs, so we have 5, obviously, we know is Mike Hilton in the nickel.
Right.
The dime defender is a slot defender, but not on a receiver. He's on the tight end side. He's to the what we call weak side of the formation, so he's a good blitzer. He can do all those things at a very high level.
Yeah.
And I think what you're going to see is him making more plays. And then when he starts to do that, while I'm grooming him to work on his coverage skill against wide receivers, if you can cover a wide receiver, dude, You could cover Travis Kelce. You can cover Kittle. You can cover Darren Waller. You can cover all the great tight ends. I want you working against wide receivers every single day. Press man-to-man coverage, because when it's time to cover those guys, I want to know that you can shut down the best tight ends. That's where his value is going to grow in our league. And then, to me, if something were to happen to Geno Stone or, say, Von Bell, because there's no doubt those two guys, I think, are our starters, I wouldn't hesitate to put him back in there. But that day's coming, right? That moment is not what you want. You don't want those guys to get hurt. But it's like what Dick LeBeau said, you're going to be playing.
Yeah,
you're too good not for us not to play you. So I want you to focus on this one thing, be very good at that, but be paying attention to being able to help our team wherever we're going to need it. Because when this is all said and done, and I know Luana Romo is saying this to Dak, we are going to need you, young man.
Yeah.
And you and I both know that's where the turnaround really and truly begins. But let's just get him to do the one thing very well, and I think he'll be fine. I trust that this is going to be a significant year for him, pointed in a positive direction.
Love it. The great Solomon Wilcox, man. Appreciate you spending time with us. As I've said many times before, could talk football all day with Solly. Love it. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. You're the best, Dave. Appreciate you.
You're the best, Solly. Have a great one, man.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
Dave Lapham here, and every day I am grateful for my experience to have played professional football. As a player, I realize self-motivation, leadership, and appreciating your teammates are key. At First Star Logistics, you can use those same attributes to create the life you want for you and your family. Build your future by working hard, like I did. You'll see results both on and off the field. Call First Star Logistics today and be part of our winning team.